And we are on the air, WRKO AM 680, the voice of Boston. This is Liberty on the Air. I'm your host, Dan Fishman, in studio with Matt McLaughlin.
Good evening, Dan. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Snowy day, nice drive in, a little bit of slick traffic for me. I came in from the North Shore, so...
And I want to thank you, this public forum, for picking me up and letting me keep my prized parking spot in South Boston.
Well, especially because Southie now, I mean, we could talk about this as a sort of a liberty issue, right?
Yes.
Southie bans, you can't reserve your spot anymore, right?
I think the rule is it's a couple of days, supposedly. Like, well, and actually, I think it's only during a snow emergency.
Right. So if we're like just a snowstorm.
And my opinion is if you are putting the real time and effort into cleaning a space, and the spaces are limited, then you know you kind of should be able to keep it. There are plenty of people with their giant SUVs that don't shovel anything. I saw a guy this afternoon who there was barely a dusting on the ground. He moved his car and put something to save it. I think that's pushing it.
Right. Although it ended up snowing pretty significantly.
It did, but he didn't do any work. To me, the whole point of the saver is that you've...
It wasn't really saved anything, right? Because it was just a dusting. He put the thing down, and then it snowed around it. So really what he saved was a six-inch spot where his chair was.
And if it's a huge blizzard, I can see, you know, I shovel out the space, I want it, I can agree with that. But a little dusting like today, I think is nothing.
Oh, yep. I agree. But, you know, not really sure exactly what it's going to end up being, and... So it was just nice not to have to move my car. So thank you, Dan.
Yeah, no, happy to do it. And to be fair, I like to drive a little bit in the snow when it's a little bit challenging. You know, give yourself a little bit of time. It's fun. It's New England. Give me a little snow, I'm okay. Give me 2 feet, I'd rather stay in.
Yeah, I don't mind the snow. I mean, we live in Boston. It happens. And today was one of those, the early snow was beautiful. It was the stuff that clings to the trees. It's that winter wonderland kind of look to it.
We went for a walk out at the... up in the North Shore, and it was fantastic with the snow coming down. Absolutely superb. So this idea, though, that, you know, if you claim your spot, it's yours, right? That's a tribal idea. That's tribalism.
Hmm.
The idea that I own this, I have claimed this. Tribalism is one of these things that's happening right now in American politics. We have split into tribes. We are no longer, you know, go back Barack Obama's speech of we are not red states, we are not blue states, we are the United States. Well, we kind of lost that. Instead, what we're dealing with is that we are Republicans, the Republican tribe, and the Democratic tribe, and everybody else who's not in one of those tribes, if you're not with us, you're against us. And we got a couple examples of that going on. And this is not a new story. We've been working towards this in America for a long time. But probably some of the big examples, the number one example I would give, is right now in Alabama, Republicans are getting ready to elect a man who is in their tribe, but in all other, by almost any other definition, is a pretty reprehensible guy. I mean, aside from the fact that he said that he thought homosexuality ought to be punishable by death, and this is back when he was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Alabama. he installed a giant statue of the Ten Commandments on the grounds.
Well, in his defense, it was a great movie.
It was a great movie. Charlton Heston. Can you name any other actor from the movie?
Yes. There was the Ten Commandments.
Yes.
You had, what's his face? The King
Bald
and
Head,
I.
Yul Brynner.
Yul Brynner.
Yep.
You had Edgar G. Robinson.
Edgar G. Robinson, outstanding casting.
You had a young...
Olivia de Havilland?
Olivia de Havilland, yes. But also John Derek.
Wow, really?
Bo Derek's husband. He played one of the slaves.
Interesting. So, a little bit of a side there. So, yes, tribalism. And that's another great example of
tribalism.
Yeah, of tribalism, right? Wandering tribes who wandered the desert for 40 years after that. So, our breakup.
Should have stopped and asked for directions.
Roy Moore. We don't do that. Roy Moore. Men? Is the perfect example of tribalism. He installed this copy of the Ten Commandments against, it was clearly against the law. He wanted to establish that he was above the law, that he ought to be able to do what he thinks was right, and he was supported by his tribe. So here he is running for Senate. Interestingly enough, he beats Luther Strange in the primary, who is Donald Trump's candidate. So Roy Moore's got power in Alabama. that's larger than, different than just his tribe. If Trump is the face of the Republican Party right now, well, I mean, I don't know if he is or not.
No, technically, he's the president and of one party. So
exactly, he won a primary against a lot of people.
Yeah,
but so Luther Strange lost, Roy Moore won, and then these allegations start coming out, and we're up to 14 women now who are accusing Roy Moore of various levels of impropriety. Some things, you know, we don't know if they're true or not. Some of the stories are almost laughable. The idea that he was supposedly he was banned at 31 years old from the local shopping mall because he was being too creepy in the way that he was staring at girls. Now, you have to be really creepy to be banned from the mall, because that's generally the place where guys go to be creepy and stare at girls.
Yeah, but you not to – I mean, yeah, that's fine if you're in eighth grade. Maybe not fine, but that's –
Well, right.
You know, a junior high, very 80s movie sort of thing to do. You don't do that as a 31-year-old.
So, right, exactly.
Looking at, you know,
well, so here's
teenage girls.
So here's
that's
an interesting question.
Just
Vice News did a fascinating interview 2 days ago. I'm going to blatantly quote them, but at least I'm giving them credit, where they got together.
Paraphrasing, people, I believe, is the industry term, Dan.
Well, so they brought together a focus group of 30 people, all of whom said they were going to vote for Roy Moore. And they had about 70 people, but they picked 30 that they liked. And they said, okay, so what do you think about this? What do you think about these allegations? And one of the men said, well, this is a different Alabama. And I'm not going to do – well, maybe I'll do the accent. 40 years ago in Alabama, a mother and father would be happy if their 14-year-old daughter was being hit on by an assistant district attorney. I don't know that that's necessarily true, but I think that there's a little bit of it and that it's a slightly different time. But I don't think it was okay to hit on. And then another woman said, I met my husband when I was 16 years old. All right, I'm going to stop doing the accent. I think it's
how old was her husband at the time?
He was 30.
Ooh.
Yeah, so is the South different? Are we judging them? Or
well, I think your larger point, Dan, is it's not so much that it's not so much the tribalism of is that Republicans are sort of going gathering around him, wanting him to win.
Right.
Despite these allegations of him being a total weird creep, and despite the fact that in a lot of ways he doesn't really represent the party.
Right.
There's a lot of people that don't like, you know, a lot of true conservatives that don't really agree with him and don't like him, but the sheer fact that they just want a Republican, none of this stuff matters. And this is the tribalism I think you're talking about. It's like, none of this stuff matters. You guys, the other team hates him, so my team must like him. We got to get him in because we don't want to lose to your team at any point. And I think that's the real problem with tribalism. I think that's what you're talking about, is that sort of stuff. And it's not – it's something we've definitely gone through in politics in the past. I mean, Bill Clinton was part of this. I mean, there's a bunch of allegations about him. He denied, and there were people, you know, it was talk of it was just a vast right-wing conspiracy against him, and people excused the things they said. Even if he did do it, it's not bad because they agreed with what he did politically, so they can't give in to that sort of thing.
Right, exactly. And one of the problems with that is that there is a blindness that people have. I would say almost a willful blindness, because in the same focus group, they asked some of the women, say, is that how you would like to be treated? And they said, I was treated that way. I went through, you know, I had these men hitting on me. And he said, well, how did it feel for the people to not believe you, for the people to, you know, to disregard what you were saying? You know, how did that make you feel? He said, and let me ask you this. He said, do you believe the allegations that are happening against these women? And they said, no, we don't. And they cited, recent examples of the media really getting it wrong. And we have a great example of this recently where the CNN published a story, and in the story it said that Donald Trump was working with WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks.
The idea that they had sent him an email sort of before they had let it out
to
the public.
On September 4th.
So that was the Democratic emails. They were like to try to prove that he was in cahoots with.
Right. And then it turned out that, in fact, the date somehow somebody had changed September 14th to September 4th when CNN published it, when in fact September 4th September 14th was the day that everybody got the story. So there was a disconnect somewhere. CNN published it as a truthful story. And now
with
everybody...
With, I believe, an obvious axe to grind. I mean, they're trying to...
Exactly. Right. This is not the first story they've gotten wrong about Trump recently, right? And the ABC guy who had to resign, or he got suspended for a month for, again, just completely getting a story wrong about Donald Trump Jr. He's still on suspension. I can't remember exactly what the name of it is.
And Dan, not to cut you off, but I think... One of the things we want to talk about tonight is the idea that this is just generically bad for people, bad for America. This sort of like, well, I'm just going to believe me. I'm just going to – or just believe one side. And if the side I don't like says something about somebody, then I can't believe it. This does not get us to a common ground. It does not get us to move forward. It doesn't get us to any sort of mutual understanding.
Yep. I agree with you. Well, and speaking of, you know, what does America think, let's find out what Benji thinks. Benji's on the line. Benji, thanks for calling in.
Hey,
where are you calling in from, Benji?
Calling in from Tennessee, East Tennessee to be exact.
East wow. Tennessee, we appreciate that phone call coming in. I have spent many fine nights out at the Parthenon in Nashville.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, so I was originally asked to call in to maybe clear up some misconceptions that you all might have about the alt-right, but I see that the topic of tonight's show is tribalism. As an unapologetic tribalist from the alt-right, I can maybe I can offer something for that as well.
Well, let me ask you then. I mean, do you think that there is a that certainly we could say that the alt-right is definitely a tribe unto itself at this point in time. They have a group of ideas they feel they don't want to be influenced. You tell me if I'm mischaracterizing it. Don't want to be influenced from the outside world. They want to have a almost apartheid. Would you call it apartheid?
I wouldn't call self-determination apartheid, no.
Why don't you give us your what you think of the alt-right? What draw to it? Your sort of little elevator pitch on what they are and what you like about them.
Okay. Well, the alt-right is tribalistic. It's anti-egalitarian and racial realist. It's anti-leftist. And that's the agreements between I'm a co-founder of the alt-libertarian movement, and that would be the similarities between alt-libertarians and the rest of the alt-right.
So what do you mean by anti-leftist?
Okay, so the leftists are the collectivists that we as private property, free market-loving conservatives oppose.
Right.
They're based in either cultural Marxist strategy or postmodernist philosophy or some combination of the two usually.
Sure. Well, so let me ask you this. you know, the basic of the Marxist theory is from each according to his ability to each according to his needs. Right? I've heard that before. Do you think your family runs that way?
That's the claim of Marxist.
No, no, I'm saying that is the basic idea behind Marxist theory.
Cultural Marxists are different from, you know, traditional.
Right. I'm just talking about what Karl Marx wrote, right? Right? Marx wrote from each according to his ability to each according to his needs, right?
Okay.
You don't think he wrote that?
Yes, that's absolutely what he said.
Okay, so let me ask you, does your family operate according to that principle? From each according to his ability, to each according to his needs.
My family operates on a tribalistic level. Not, I mean, I guess in some instances, but it's improper to compare a family to a society.
Well, but I'm just starting.
You're not advocating Marxism, are you, as a self-proclaimed libertarian?
I'm absolutely not advocating Marxism. Okay. What I'm saying, though, is we have to recognize that there are things on scales. Like in the scale of my family, because my family absolutely operated that way. When I was a child, I did not have the ability to care for myself. My parents took care of me. Now that I am older and my ability is greater and their needs are greater, I help to take care of them.
But surely you wouldn't advocate that on a societal level, right?
I wouldn't advocate it on a societal level if it was based on force.
Why wouldn't you advocate it on a societal level?
I wouldn't advocate it based on force. However, I absolutely, based on my ability, am happy to voluntarily help people out.
Absolutely, sure. And be as charitable as you want to be.
Well, but isn't that sort of falling into the Marxist idea? I mean, absent the force.
There's a difference in voluntary charity and
so you support voluntary Marxism.
The wealth from the bourgeoisie.
You support voluntary Marxism. The basic idea of taking care of each other.
I support voluntarism, period.
Right.
On a personal note, within the construct of a voluntary society, I would want to live in a capitalist community, not a socialist community.
Well, but now the basic idea of Marxism, and now I agree with you that socialism is different from Marxism, right? Socialism is the government controlling the means of production, a social organization, mainly the community property owning the social order of construction. That's a little bit different from, you know, because Marx progressed around his thought, and I think he got a little crazier as he went along, right? And he starts off talking about capital, and then, you know, he gets into Marxism. Then he eventually progresses into communism. Socialism is an older idea. You know, Marx sort of borrowing from Jean-Jacques Rousseau, social contract.
I mean, it's a progression of thought. Yeah, I get it.
Well, and so I agree with that. In terms of these ideas, if you are a complete voluntarist, right? You're probably not anti anything. You're only pro certain things for yourself, right?
I am absolutely anti things. I am the enemies of liberty are my enemies, and I make no bones about that.
Well, tyrants, right? Tyrants, authoritarians, sure, of course. But I don't see how that means that you would be anti-leftist, because there are people who are leftists who are not necessarily authoritarians, right? I mean, think about, like, you know, maybe
they are useful idiots who are advocating for tyranny.
Well,
so maybe I don't, you know, maybe I don't blame them as much, you know, as if they are Karl Marx himself, but they are useful idiots pushing an ideology that is its purpose is to destroy society.
Well, in terms of you engaging with them, right? Do you think because is your long range goal to engage them, to convert them to your point of view?
That's a fundamental part to this, is that alt-libertarianism is post-argument. We realize that these people cannot be converted. Sure, there are individual instances where you can pick out certain people who can see the light, but not enough to where libertarianism can be efficiently won over in the Hayekian strategy sense.
All right. Well, I think Benji made some wonderful points there. Benji, thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. And I think that, you know, we got a view there of some of the constructs in terms of how tribalism works and what people believe is happening, and the idea that they're going to firmly get together. I think you saw a little bit of sort of the hesitation there that, you know, Benji didn't want to say at all, yeah, I agree that my family operates according to Marxist principles. Even though by that basic definition, I think that anybody rationally would say, of course, that's what we do.
I found it interesting that Benji sort of defined himself in a very sort of negative way. And by negative way, meaning he's anti-this, anti-that. And I found that sort of interesting, instead of being constructive about things.
Exactly. Well, we're going to do a little bit of construction coming up when we have some more callers. We got Skippy and Scott waiting on the line. And we are back. I want to focus us back into the conversation about tribalism and talk about the fact that sometimes it's difficult for us to recognize all the issues that we are locked into because of our tribes. And I'm going to give a list of things that I think are the big examples, and then we can talk about them a little bit more. I talked about Roy Moore, of course. I think that climate change is something that, based on your tribe, you probably have a predetermined position on climate change. I think very few people know enough to comment on the science or the historical geology. I think healthcare is tribalism, right? If you live in Massachusetts and you're a Republican, you supported Romney Care. If you were a Democrat, you ended up supporting Obamacare. They're fundamentally the same plane. Fundamentally the same plan. Why did Republicans support Romney Care and oppose Obamacare? Why did Democrats fight against Romney Care? I think that, news, a lot of, you know, what's happening in the news, where you get your news from. If you have tribalism, if you are in the right tribe, you think that Fox is the best news. If you're in the left tribe, you think CNN or MSNBC is the best news. No matter where you are, There are all these things that enhance our tribalism. The conversations I want to have when we come back is I want people to talk about what makes them in their tribe, what keeps them in their tribe, and what helps to break them out of it. Welcome back to the show on tribalism. We got a little tribal music in the background. We're going to the South Boston tribe. Matt, this is your tribe. We got Skippy on the air. Skippy, what do you know?
Hello, Dan. Listen, it's interesting you were saying about tribalism and, you know, just that divide between, and I don't like it. That's why I think we should have a third party.
Yep.
And I'm sure you'd think it'd be a libertarian. I kind of agree with you. But so there, it's gotten so vast, so vast. So it's always like constant war.
Yep.
So no matter what one side says, guess what? We're for the people. No, you're for hire, all this. But you were talking about, basically, let me just say charity. The way it looks like they keep raising taxes, and to me it sounds like it's forced charity. And let me explain why I say forced charity. It's an agenda. Now, I think a lot of people don't understand. They don't know. When you go to your taxes, have your taxes done, you can sign a form that says, I voluntarily can give extra money.
Yep.
If I think the government needs more, I can name the price, and I can give it. Personally, I wouldn't do it because I don't trust the government.
Exactly right. You're preaching to the choir, Skippy. I completely agree with that.
But you see, got people sitting on their altruistic laurels and preaching to everybody, saying, guess what? Meanwhile, they're raising taxes and fees, and I don't care if they call it a fee. It's all money coming out of someone's wallet. But they're a welfare state, sanctuary initiatives, and meanwhile, they're not taking anything out of their personal wallet. They're putting it on us, trying to make we guilty. When each individual person, if they feel that they trust the government enough to take care of the money and say, okay, you're going to help the poor and you're going to give it away, but don't force it on us.
Right. And I would make the argument that that sort of the fact that they're forcing it on us actually enforces tribalism. Because if I start helping out the needy, that breaks down the walls of tribalism. So I'm going to hop onto something else you said, Skippy. You said that we need a third-party candidate. I'm going to officially announce on the show, I'm going to be running for auditor in the state of Massachusetts. I am running specifically because I don't think it makes any sense that we would have a Democrat audit the Democratic government. I don't think it makes any sense that we would have a Republican audit the Republican governor. Auditor is the one position where you absolutely must have somebody with no political favors, no political axe to grind. If you look at the report that the auditor just released, she released a report that was critical of Charlie Baker. Just so happens that we're coming to election season. Oh, what do you think it was? Do you think the problem was that there's actually something going wrong? Because it was about DCF. It's about kids. It's an important thing. Instead, she focuses the issue of children's welfare and then points a finger at the governor. That's not the position of the auditor. The auditor should be taking care of things independently. Scott from Worcester. Thanks so much for calling in, Scott. What do you got for us today?
Hello, Mr. Fishman. You know, all of this infighting, this bickering, Democrats and Republicans, is irrelevant. It's totally moot because when you're in my shoes, and my mother was dying last Saturday night at Sandra Wolf at UMass Memorial.
I'm
Lake
sorry
Avenue.
To hear that, Scott.
Yeah, sorry.
And my dad died 4 months, Jack Wolf, 4 months before. It clears your priorities like Drano. And you know, you've been very kind to me. I'm not going to call after this. When my parents died, the light went out in me. But I just want to leave you with a thought, and your call is a thought. This back and forth infighting is
Scott,
so irrelevant.
Scott, can I talk to you for a second?
Yes.
You bring something to this show. We need your opinion. And you have consistently refined your message to the point you're communicating very effectively right now. And if you're only sharing that opinion with us, you need to find a larger voice for it because your voice needs to be heard. And I would encourage you to keep calling us and to also consider some other outputs, letters to the editor, stuff like that. Yeah. I apologize for interrupting you. Please go on.
Thank you, Sipat. This is never going to stop the bickering between Democrats and Republicans. Meanwhile, at the end of the day, America's infrastructure falls apart. Strife between blacks and whites. the debt is at $27 trillion, and this economy could implode. The market is definitely, in my opinion, going to crash. It's not a question of if, but when. America has so much, there's so much hatred and animosity in this country. And at the end of the day, when you go into an emergency room and you see people dying, and that you feel like puking on the floor because you see people amputees and all kinds of horrors and everything in tubes in their bodies, and you feel you're going to collapse on the ground, it doesn't make a damn thing about all this infighting and everything. America needs to get together, work together, just get the job done. Let's build our infrastructure. Let's start doing that.
I agree with your point entirely, Scott. I think that there are ways that we can come together voluntarily and accomplish amazing, amazing things. We got Max from Attleboro on the line. Hey, Max, I understand you got a special person there who wants to give us a message, too.
Oh, I was just warning you. I got a 2-year-old, and he's up because he's excited from snow.
Yeah.
He's not so interested in hearing himself.
But no, because if he wants to wish us a Merry Christmas on the air, that would totally be okay.
He's just turned 2, so he's a little
no
little
problem
early for that
yet. No problem. What do you got? What are your thoughts on tribalism?
So first thing I wanted to say, it's great that you're running for auditor, because I think you are a really good person for that position, and you have my endorsement.
Thank you.
Regardless of any disagreements we have, I would say you are a good voice to have around, and you do a lot of good work. And
thank you very
that's
much.
That's why, you know, people see us argue like on Facebook and stuff, and they think like we have this hatred. But
I would hope that we are a model for considered but passionate discourse. There's nothing wrong with you and me bringing passion to our arguments. We are always civil with each other, and I have a great deal of respect for your opinion. Go on with what you got.
Yeah, so as far as, like, I'm also, Benji is a friend of mine. I'm the one who kind of sent him here. And
thank you.
The alt-libertarian movement. So I don't think he really did a good job of explaining it, because he you know, you're limited in time.
Yeah, exactly.
But the idea is, we're an alternative to what we see as problems with mainstream libertarianism, and that's mostly within the National Libertarian Party, because I actually have a lot less problems with the MAS party. And obviously, you know, I'm not sure all your listeners know that they are two separate but friendly entities, I guess is the best way to put it.
Sure.
Yeah. So, one of the problems that we have is the, you know, acceptance, that this idea that you have to kind of force tolerance on people or they're not libertarian. Now, I'm not saying force in the sense of using force.
Right.
Probably a poor choice of words, but the fact that is the debate came up because of the gay wedding cake situation.
Sure.
That's in the Supreme Court, and I think it's a bigger issue that story is actually a good descriptor of. And I simply took the stance of, I have no problem with anybody disassociating their business from anybody.
Yeah, well,
let
me ask you a question about this. Do you think that libertarians should support candidates who are intolerant?
I think you're talking a matter of nuance there. So it depends on what they're intolerant about, the level of it, and there's definitely a spectrum of intolerance that I don't think is really addressed by mostly the mainstream left, but also the Libertarian Party kind of has this issue too, where. And I brought this up with you in regards to like the transsexual bathroom situation. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if transsexual is the right word, whatever. I actually don't care. But the idea being is, if there's a father and he's concerned about his daughter going into a bathroom that for all intents and purposes, biological males might be going into, the correct way to handle that is not to say, well, you're just a hateful bigot and you need to be ostracized. Right.
Right.
And
I agree with that.
What you're going to create is a hateful bigot.
And I think that whenever you tell people that their fear of the unknown is because they're stupid or ignorant, and you use hateful words, you're right. You're going to make enemies unnecessarily. On the other hand, you know, if you can, you know, just show somebody that there's no reason to be fearful of trans people of anybody picking a bathroom of their choice. Now, there are plenty of assaults. I mean, numerically, we look at it right now, assaults in bathrooms, very high numbers. Generally, people, not, I'm willing to bet, and I don't know the number exactly, but it's got to be at least 99% of them are people of the sex that they, you know, of the gender that they identify as. You see men committing assault in women's rooms all the time. So right. The issue of the women's rooms being unsafe has nothing to do with trans men or women going in there. It also displays sort of an ignorance of what trans people look like. And I will tell you, I was ignorant in this respect until Daryl Perry introduced me to a trans male porn star who, if you didn't know better, this guy was a buff, mustache, beard. You would swear that he was a man. But no, he had transitioned from being a woman to being a man. Well, likewise,
it's more transsexual as opposed to transgendered. I could be wrong. I may be.
I would probably get some of those wrong too. Go on.
Many trans people will actually accuse you with what you just said of passibilism, I believe they call it, where they're saying that you're kind of putting on a pinnacle people who are more passable as the gender that they're, identify as, and other people who are less passable feel put down by that. And that's the slippery slope I'm talking about.
Right.
Is where, what is the line of a bigot when every time you raise the bar and every new thing is a new offense? And I believe the libertarian on that, and anybody can, prove me wrong if they want, is, well, your feelings aren't what actually matters, and if you feel offended by it, you can just disassociate with them.
And I would agree with that 100%, Max. Nobody should be making laws based on their feels.
I was a comment I wanted to make. One of the things to sort of jump on, there was an intolerant sort of comment, and you had actually asked the question, should you think, you asked Max if you thought that a libertarian should support a candidate who is intolerant. And that struck me as sort of a part, sort of tribalism there in a way. And I mean, I guess it depends on what you mean by intolerant and intolerant in what ways. And I think there is sort of a, you're not going to agree with somebody. It's very unlikely you're going to agree with any candidate across the board. Like, sure. You might like their position on taxes, but not like their position on how to fund infrastructure or something like that. But, you've got the things you like more or less. So I think there's always the compromise that I think this country has sort of lost as an ideal. So it's a,
right. Tribalism works against compromise. In fact, tribalism will encourage you to never compromise.
I think it's fascinating. We were talking about, there was a, sort of a conversation about, trans, which I'm no expert on. I don't always not trying to offend anybody, but one of the big things they talk about is that things aren't binary.
Right.
That there is more. There is a spectrum in gender and identity and this stuff. But I find that tribalism in general, and a lot of these things, is very binary. It's incredibly. It is an all or nothing thing. Like if you believe in global warming, then you have to believe that the ocean's going to rise, 20 feet, and like Boston's going to be underwater in 15 years, and therefore we must do these drastic things. You can't be like, yes, it is man-made, it is happening, but I don't believe some of these other things. Then you're still, at that point, some sort of a skeptic of some ways. And that, I think, is a problem, is no sort of give and take and understanding of the nuances of positions.
I agree with that. We got Chris calling in from East Hampstead. Chris, what do you know about tribalism?
Well, I'm going to use a famous sociologist who came out with a study way back. It was called Gemeinschaft, Gesellschaft. Basically, one meaning community, the other one meaning bureaucracy. So I think there's a lot. Those are the two major tribes, and then you have all the micro tribes that fall under each one.
Yes, I agree. So, what would you think about avoiding that trap? I mean, is it something that you think that we can work beyond? Are we doomed to repeat this path of tribalism that has sort of, dogged America, dogged human history?
I think that people are kind of have a predisposition towards one or the other. I think almost in some cases, almost genetic. I think there is a liberal mind and there is a conservative mind. And I think that when it comes down to it, there's places where we meet and there's places where we're never going to meet.
And if given that situation, what does that say about the idea that we have an authoritarian government? that we, and it's, therefore we have a schizophrenic government. So when the right wins an when the right tribe wins an election, we do this, and when the left tribe wins an election, we undo that and we do this, and we go back and forth. Are we doomed to repeat that path of schizophrenia?
I think so. I think the pendulum kind of swings in both directions, but yet for some reason through our, the election, it has a tendency of correcting itself. It's like it gets too far to the right, then it gets too far to the left, and it kind of always manages to swing. I mean, we're a country that's based off a constitution that's so original that almost it seems like many other countries are very alike, and we're very different. And I think keeping that different because that we are a special place. I think a lot of people fear losing that.
Right.
And I think on both sides.
Right. I would agree with you that we're a special place, but I would disagree that we are doomed to repeat this path of schizophrenia where the right takes control and then the left takes control. And then the right passes, the right goes to war, the left stops it, the left passes healthcare. The right repeals it. The right passes a tax plan. The left is going to spend out of control. All that stuff, we are not doomed to repeat that. We're only doomed to repeat that as long as we continue the path that Matt pointed out. We continue this path of binary tribalism. As long as there's only two voices, only right and left, only up and down, only good and evil, only black and white, we will never find a way to break this pattern. But the reality of it is that these issues that we're talking about are government. It's not right and left. It's not black and white. There's gray. There's red. There's all these different colors that we ought to be able to appreciate. You know, you paint with all the colors of the rainbow. That's what's awesome about our society is that we are learning to integrate all of that. And we've learned to do it in cultural patterns. We need to learn how to do it in political patterns. That's outstanding. Vanessa Williams singing The Colors of the Wind. Vanessa Williams, Miss America.
And a famous model for a magazine, I believe.
Yes.
And a fine actress.
Yeah, married former Celtics Rick Fox as well.
That's true.
You're welcome, guys.
Thank you. Will Anderson rocking the producer booth.
I wanted to talk about, I think, we talk about tribalism, and I think the you know the colors of the wind. And I think one of the things you, Dan, as a libertarian, and some of the libertarians I hear, I think one of the things you guys talk about is sort of the third voice. And I think one of the problems with tribalism is that we only listen to certain people. We listen to certain things, be it we only watch CNN or only get our news and opinions from comedians on Comedy Central doing fake news programs, or by reading Fox News or watching Fox News or what, and we sort of. There used to be a time when news was sort of the news stations and the newspapers sort of, you know, they shuffled through stuff and they sort of told you the big stories of the day. And, you know, yes, they, you know, they sort of fed it to us, but we sort of chose it. They sort of did it without bias or, I mean, less bias, it seems. And now we have more choice, which is great, but there's only so many voices that we listen to and that makes our opinions very stark. And I believe that there's a lot more people out there who have more nuanced opinions. They just don't really have that voice. They're not necessarily hardcore conservative or hardcore liberals.
And they don't have the voice because they don't have the experience of talking about the issues. And that's one of the things that, again, tribalism shuts down. Tribalism crushes people who are not in either tribe because they're threats. So if you want to have a moderate message, they shut you up.
Yeah, or even being able to have a conversation where people, you know, disagree. I mean, when you have a compromise between a couple of things, I mean, the whole point of a compromise to some extent, or some philosophers say, is that nobody's happy. And that, you know, when you know, political compromises, you're not going to get everything you want. And in big political issues, that's, you know, that's sort of the way, and maybe sort of the middle of the road. Like each side has their points in these things, and we're not listening to people. And I think I think people are getting tired of it, to be honest. I think
so. To that end, a couple of points I want to talk about. First of all, the Libertarian Party is looking for people who want to run for office. We are going to be running a candidate training next month in Watertown. I will take it. I will also be teaching it, but you don't even have to be a libertarian. If you want to run for office, We're opening it up to anybody who's not a Republican or Democrat. Candidate training. We just want people to run for office. If you want to find out more about it, go to the Libertarian Massachusetts Facebook page and we'll tell you about it. The other thing I want to talk about is that I am running for auditor. Having made this decision, committing to it, to running for the race, and I've talked on the air before that running for office is, it's for some people, it's a vanity project. I passed that with my first election. Now I'm running. They say a good man runs for office because he's afraid of the bad men there or the bad women there. And in this case, I know that the current auditor is way behind in the number of audits she's supposed to be doing. She's supposed to audit every state agency once every 3 years. But you can go to the website and you can see that there are agencies that haven't been audited in 9 years. Jeez. Before she took office. You can also go and see that the audits that they're doing are not what you and I would consider audits. They look into one specific aspect of what the agency is doing, as opposed to a complete accounting. So what I want to do as an auditor, I'm a computer guy. I am going to bring my technological experience to bear. I am going to put all the books online all the time. And I'm going to start with the auditor's office, right? Who audits the auditor? So a legitimate question. The auditor's office should be the example of transparency. And you say, oh, you know, certain state agencies, they won't want to do it. Start with the auditor's office because we want to be the transparency that we want. People might have some concerns about the Libertarian Party, but a Libertarian in the auditor's office is exactly the sort of change that begins to break our tribalism. If you're concerned about tribalism in our country today, the way to fix it is to elect somebody who's not in either tribe. Give power to their message. And if you can do that, if you do it in an office that makes a difference, and the auditor's office doesn't have a lot of power to change things, but they have a tremendous amount of power to expose things, to bring transparency to government. And that bringing that transparency to government also works against tribalism, because if you are aware of everything that's going on, if you're aware of everything the Republicans are doing, if you're aware of everything the Democrats are doing, how every dime is spent, you become more involved. And you might say, you know what? That's what's crazy. Even if I'm a Republican, it's ridiculous that we're spending all this money on whatever. Even if I'm a Democrat, it's ridiculous that we're spending all this money on whatever the Democrats are spending money on. Yeah, but you don't know about it.
Save some government money here.
Right. Exactly. Because
money.
Right. Where does the money come from? Right. I thought one of Larry Sharp's greatest points last week was this argument between de Blasio and Cuomo over who was going to pay. Was Cuomo going to pay with it with his money? Was de Blasio going to play with it his money? And as Larry pointed out, it's not the governor's money. It's not the mayor's money. It's the taxpayer's money. So if we want to change that idea, the idea that we are not going to be able to break out of our tribes, we can change it right now. My website is www.auditmassachusetts.com. My name is Dan Fishman. This is Liberty on the Air. We look forward to hearing you guys next week.
Good night, Skippy. Stay safe in the snow.
People talk about sin taxes. The government taxes cigarettes because it says smoking is bad, and they want less people to smoke. The government taxes alcohol because it says drinking is bad, and they want less people to drink. So why is the government taxing income? Join that discussion and lots more, and listen live to Liberty on the Air with your host, Dan Fishman, every Saturday night at 11 p.m. right here on The Voice of Boston, AM 680, WRKO.